Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films Rocket Man, Charlie Says, and The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. I hope you do it in that order. Hi, David. How are you?
I will do it in that order. How are you doing this week, Jill?
Good. Spoiler alert, did you like Rocket Man?
Rocket Man has a whole lot of pizzazz. That is how I would put it. Rocket Man is actually two of these movies are biopics, both Rocket Man and Charlie Says, although very, very different kinds of biopics. And Charlie Says isn't exactly a biopic. But anyway, Rocket Man definitely is. And it's a rock and roll biopic. And actually, one of my more recent books, available, by the way, everywhere from Rutgers University Press, is called Rock and Roll Movies. So this is a subject on which I've spent a lot of time over the years. And Rocket Man is a biopic about Elton John. And I had a theory up until fairly recently that rock and roll biopics are almost always good. You can look at things like the Buddy Holly story and La Bamba and Great Balls of Fire and What's Love Got to Do with It. And these are all like good movies to one degree or another. Then things began to get a little shaky. And I think of late that my theory has not been holding up all that well. And one of the reasons for that is Bohemian Rhapsody, which has its points. But that movie about Freddie Mercury, it just didn't really connect with me. I didn't really find that the Freddie Mercury character or the actor who played him had all that much charisma. And interestingly, Bohemian Rhapsody having been out just recently, there's a connection between that and Rocket Man, because Rocket Man was directed by Dexter Fletcher, and Dexter Fletcher finished up directing Bohemian Rhapsody when the original director of that, Bryan Singer, got fired for one of these sexual scandals that we have so often nowadays. So Bryan Singer was fired off of Bohemian Rhapsody, and Dexter Fletcher finished up the movie, even though his name does not appear in the credits as director. He was also an executive producer of the movie. But now we have Dexter Fletcher's very own movie about a rock and roll superstar, which is Rocket Man, about Elton John. And I have to say that Rocket Man just clicks its way right through all of the biopic cliches. I mean, it's got everything, especially for a rock and roll biopic. Holy cow, it's got everything. It starts out with him showing up for his rehab group therapy session in his rehab, and he confesses to everything. He's an addict to this, he's an addict to that, he's an addict to the other thing. And then as he goes through this group therapy session, what most of the movie consists of is these long flashbacks, starting out with his childhood and then up through his becoming a superstar and then his falling into the traps of all the different kinds of addictions. So that is what it is. And again, it just is sort of one cliche after another, but presented, as I said at the beginning, with a whole lot of pizzazz. The movie has a lot of energy. And one moment that people are all talking about, which I will now also talk about, which really kind of sums up what is best about this movie, is there's a moment when Elton John gets up there and he starts to sing and to play, and he's playing the piano and his fingers are bouncing up and down, and then suddenly he kind of leaps into the air, and as he leaps into the air, everything goes into super slow motion and he seems to levitate as he's playing the piano, and then all the people in the crowd listening seem to levitate off the floor, and it's a wonderful, wonderful moment. And if the whole movie were like that, I would say Rocket Man was a great film. But the whole movie's not like that. Only parts of it are like that. What it does have all the way through is, well, first of all, the acting is pretty good, I think. Elton John is played by Taron Egerton, whose name I think is going to become a whole lot better known as a result of this movie. And, you know, most of the acting in the film is pretty good. And we see Elton John rise from being a young boy named Reggie Dwight from these very, very sort of working class origins and working his way up and so forth. So, you know, it's all pretty well acted. And there are some fabulous outfits in this. Elton John wore fabulous outfits, and at one point somebody even says, "Your outfits are too fabulous. Why not just go up there and be yourself?" And he says, "No, people don't want to see me. They want to see basically Rocket Man." So he has to like doll himself up and do all of these fancy things. And the movie shows all that. And again, there's a lot of great outfits and there's a lot of energy and it moves along. And there's some pretty good music. I have to say, I've never really been into Elton John, although I discovered at a concert years ago that he had a really great band, at least for a while there. But anyway, if you really like Elton John, you'll probably like the movie even more, even though you don't hear his singing. You hear Taron Egerton singing and the singing of other people, a little bit of Elton John, but mostly other people doing the singing. Near the end, as so often happens with movies like this, it gets soggy and sappy and sentimental, and then I really lost patience with it for a while. But that's only near the end. Most of the way, the movie is quite entertaining, and again, it's always pretty fabulous to look at. So people who are into Elton John will really, really like it. People who are into pop music and rock music generally will like it. And people like me who are, you know, not so much on Elton John, but like a movie with energy and pizzazz, will at least like a good deal of it. It's a good movie, not a great movie. I would like to turn now to a movie that is very, very different, and that is Charlie Says, which is also based on real life. And the Charlie of the title, Charlie Says, is Charles Manson. So yes, this is now basically a horror movie. And I'll mention right now that Charlie Says was directed by Mary Harron, who is an interesting director who I moderated and hosted a session with her years ago in New York, and I found her to be just a nice, smart, good, sensitive person to talk about film. But she has kind of built her career on movies which, let's say, don't exactly have the feminine touch, or at least you wouldn't think so at the beginning. She kind of came on the scene back in the middle of the 90s with I Shot Andy Warhol, which is about Valerie Solanas, who shot Andy Warhol, again, a movie based on real life events. Then in 2000, she directed American Psycho, the interesting movie based on Bret Easton Ellis's very, very interesting novel, American Psycho. And then more recently, in the middle, actually, it was about 2005, she made the notorious Betty Page about a model who had a sort of a scandalous life. So all these, you know, major films by Mary Harron based on real life figures. And now she has returned with yet another subject, which has a very, very, very dark side, as all of those movies do too as well, and which again is based on real life. But this time, moving into the story of Charles Manson and the horrible murders in the Manson gang, Mary Harron has come up with a very unusual kind of way into this, which is to say, her movie is not so much about Manson, although he's a very important character in the film, pretty obviously, but it's about the three of the young women who were part of the Manson family and part of the gang that committed these horrifying murders. Manson is played by Matt Smith. Good performance. All the movies about Manson have a pretty, most of at least ones I'm most familiar with, have pretty good performances as Manson. But really, it is the women who take over this movie, played by people like Annabeth Gish and Hannah Murray and Suki Waterhouse. And then there is a graduate student who visits them, a woman named Carlene Faith, who is played by Merritt Weaver. So here's the premise of the movie, of Charlie Says. The three of the young women who were part of the Manson gang have all been arrested, put on trial, and sentenced to death. But then their death sentence is commuted to life imprisonment. But they are stuck on death row because it's the only place that the prison has that can house them safely, not in the general population. So here are these three young women living pretty much in isolation just with each other. And then this young graduate student who is studying this sort of thing and has great compassion for them because they're kind of stuck in this situation with just three of them, you know, maybe forever, comes to visit them and talk with them and try to, you know, make their lives maybe a little bit more fulfilling. And above all, maybe help them understand how they got sucked into what they sucked into, why they did what they did, what it all meant in their lives. Help them come to grips with the reality of the horrific things that they were involved with, and maybe help them to overcome both that past evil which they were involved with, and maybe give their lives a little bit more meaning, a little bit more hope as they look forward to a very bleak future, because again, they've been arrested and they're in prison and all of that. So that's the premise of the movie. But once again, most of the movie is really flashbacks to the various events that happened. But it doesn't really dwell on the murders. They're in there, of course. The horrible Manson family gang murders are in there. But the movie is mostly about other things. It is mostly about these three young women and how they were kind of drifting through life and didn't really know what they wanted and how they ended up in different ways coming to this ranch where Manson and his so-called family live, and getting sort of sucked into that and becoming a part of that community. And it kind of just goes into the background of all this and tries to in some way explain to us how this kind of thing could happen, how this kind of thing came to happen, because of course it's all real life material. And then we do have in there, of course, the murders and so forth. Now, a lot of the stuff in Charlie Says is really fairly familiar material. These young women are basically just sort of slightly older girls. They're very immature. How they are kind of breaking with their families and they're looking for themselves and they get sucked into this weird community. And certainly there is the charisma, such as it is, of Manson himself. So all of this kind of thing is the thing we've seen in plenty of movies about cults and, you know, so-called families and like this. But what makes Charlie Says into a good movie and a movie worth seeing is it's very well acted and very kind of sensitively written. It does not excuse anything that happened. It certainly doesn't excuse Manson. He comes off as pretty much a sort of a mildly charismatic monster. And it doesn't excuse the young women, but it kind of explains how people who are really drifting through life, who are very immature, who have not yet come into a real sense of themselves, how they can get pulled into something like this and lose their sense of proportion and end up doing things which seem to them themselves in later times to be inexplicable. How could I have done this? And the movie is a fairly sensitive exploration of that. Charlie Says has not been very well received by critics, but I found it a perfectly worthwhile movie. These things are very dark and very troubling to think about, but you know, they really exist in the world. There have been so many cults like this, so many violent actions like this, and sometimes ones like this that become hugely famous and that everybody knows about without really understanding. And a movie like this is a small step in trying to help us understand how things like this take place in the real world. Mary Harron is an intelligent director, and I think she's done a very nice job of putting this together in a way that can help us explain maybe or understand maybe just a tiny little bit about how things like this can happen when seemingly ordinary people get sucked into these extraordinary situations and behave in ways that they themselves can't really understand. Finally, I want to touch on The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, which is the latest movie from the great Terry Gilliam. Now, this is a movie which has barely even made its way onto the theatrical circuit. But you can find it on streaming platforms all over the place. It's a very easy movie to see if you want to. Terry Gilliam is an amazing filmmaker who, of course, started out as a member of the Monty Python comedy troupe. He didn't perform with them, but he did the animations on their TV show. He then became a filmmaker, and he's made a whole lot of remarkable movies, the greatest one of all being the science fiction film Brazil, one of the great science fiction movies of all time. Other movies like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and he was involved with Monty Python's Life of Brian and The Meaning of Life, The Fisher King, various movies, some of them better than others. He's made also some pretty bad movies along the way, but he has had, shall we say, a kind of a troubled career. He's made some masterpieces, but very often they've had trouble connecting with audiences. And then he's made some movies that are not so good, and then everybody says, see, he's not a good filmmaker, even though he is actually an incredibly gifted filmmaker. Again, a lot of ups and downs in his career. I used to know Terry. I used to be friendly with him for a while. I respect his work a lot. I understand that his movies are certainly not all great. And I was very curious to see his latest, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, which once again is a troubled Terry Gilliam film because he got into a terrible legal dispute with his producer, and that's one of the reasons why the film does not have the kind of high profile that it should have. In any case, it is like so many of Terry's movies, it is a fantasy. This time we have Adam Driver, who plays a movie director who is making a movie about Don Quixote, and he finds this old cobbler in this Spanish village who is played by the wonderful Jonathan Pryce, who he decides he would like to play Don Quixote in his movie, and then the old cobbler comes to think that the movie director, played by Adam Driver, actually is his Sancho Panza, and the two of them get into all kinds of adventures, and the movie takes place in the modern day, but a lot of it seems to take place back in Don Quixote's day. It's a movie which is bursting with energy, bursting with inventiveness, is much more under control than some similar Terry Gilliam movies, such as The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, but just doesn't quite click. It's a fascinating movie to see, full of color, inventiveness, innovativeness, full of all kinds of stuff, with very nice performances by Adam Driver and Jonathan Pryce, but again, the whole thing doesn't quite click. If you want to see a fabulous sort of quasi-historical adventure, then this is the movie for you. If you want to see a fantasy film that really works beautifully from start to finish, this is not the movie for you. I wish Terry Gilliam well. I hope he comes back and makes more excellent movies. This one is almost really good, but not quite really good, and I have to leave it sort of in that middle ground. I wish it were better than it is. It's a wonderful film in some ways, unfortunately, not in all ways. And that is my somewhat mixed bag of a story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you, as ever, David Starrett, Films in Focus, the films Rocket Man, Charlie Says, and The Man Who Killed Don Quixote.